Welcome to Hour 3 of the Rachel Maddow Show. I'm Terry McNally, normally heard in L.A. on KPFK and on the web at terrymcnally.net. My interviews often appear in print at alternet.org. And last week, my interview with Michael Pollan on his book In Defense of Food was most read and most emailed post at Alternet. I believe the currently most read post at Alternet is about Rachel Maddow being the hottest new star in progressive media. Rachel and I both spent last week at the Conference on World Affairs, as she just told you, in Boulder, Colorado, and she broadcast from there all last week. This conference has been going on for 60 years and is a pretty unique event. Panelists come from all fields, all continents, to speak on all subjects, including some that they would not be considered experts on. And to give you a bit more of an idea what goes on there, I'm going to share with you a brief piece I offered on a panel entitled Surviving Contact with Extraterrestrials. Then I'll spend a few minutes with Phil Donahue, also with Robert Greenwald of Brave New Films, and then with Gordon Adams, all focus on the costs of war and defense spending. So I appear on a panel at the Conference on World Affairs called Surviving Contact with Extraterrestrials. This is my contribution. I thought long and hard about the question the title raises. Could we survive an extraterrestrial invasion? Let's see. Whoever would make it here would probably be considered a universal superpower, perhaps the only universal superpower. We assume they would have enormously superior military capability. We assume they would have excellent intelligence about Earth's capacity to respond, specifically about whether or not we had weapons of mass destruction. One would expect that any entity willing and able to pull off such an attack would think long and hard about the consequences and only move forward after long and careful planning. Still, a lot would depend on why they choose to invade us and how ruthless they're willing to be in doing so. Since we've had no decipherable communication from any extraterrestrial entities, I can't see how it could be based on political opposition. We have no reason to believe it would be based on a personal vendetta. I mean, it's not as if an earthling ever tried to kill an extraterrestrial's dad, for example. So it could be for resources. So if, in fact, this is a civilization that prizes the same resources we do, oil or fish or the U.S. Bill of Rights, for example, well, they're already late. Those are pretty much gone. On the other hand, if they're after CO2, they should wait a while longer because there's little sign we're going to stop loading the atmosphere with that for years to come. Or it could be for territory. If so, I'd expect them in the next 18 months. The global economic crisis should offer them the opportunity to grab real estate at cataclysmically low prices. The crucial question is whether or not they want to wipe us out. You see, if they do, then they probably will. A literal scorched earth policy with a capital E from an enemy willing and able to eliminate life would probably succeed. So if that's the scenario, no, we don't survive. But let's say they're intent on invading us, but unwilling to, shall we say, finish the job. Say they want us for slaves or science experiments. They want to convert us to their religion or their political system. Now I think that changes everything. See, they could strike us with shock and awe. They could destroy much of our infrastructure, knock over a few statues, let us run wild, free to loot our most prized earthly treasures at shopping malls from Dallas to Dubai. But I suggest if they do that, we just play possum. We allow them to get overconfident, let one of their leaders prance around on the deck of a spaceship claiming victory. See, to them, I'm sure we all look alike. See, they'll never know who surrendered and who hasn't. So we offer them no direct confrontations. We instead attack at random in ways that render their superior arms useless. If we refuse to give up until they lose the support of their population back home, I'm confident we would ultimately drive them away with any tail-like protuberances between however many legs they might have. See, my hope lies in the knowledge that unless you are willing to annihilate those you've invaded, everyone knows you can't win an occupation. Thank you, and God bless Earth. Okay, so that's what goes on at the Conference on World Affairs. Next, I'm going to bring in one of the real pioneers of both radio and television, Phil Donahue. He pioneered the call-in talk show format on radio in Dayton, Ohio. And then in 1967, he introduced the audience participation format to local TV. His show, Donahue, ran for 29 years. Turned out he was off message in the media drumbeat for the invasion of Iraq, and his brief return to television was canceled in February 03. Donahue and The Donahue Show have been honored with 20 Daytime Emmy Awards and a Peabody Award. Phil Donahue has collaborated with veteran documentary filmmaker Ellen Spiro to create a film, Body of War, that intercuts two stories, an unsanitized look at one Iraq veteran paralyzed from the chest down and the Senate's flawed debate and 77-23 vote to authorize the war. Now, I realize that Rachel spoke with Phil Donahue a little over 2 weeks ago, but I'm going to share a few minutes of an interview I did with him because in just the few minutes, he focuses on the Iraq debacle at three levels, on the level of one disabled human being, on the level of the leaders who sent him there, and on the accepted, bloated military budget that makes that war inevitable. I recently interviewed Joe Stiglitz about his book, The $3 Trillion War, his attempt to put a realistic price tag on U.S. wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And in the second segment, we'll talk with Robert Greenwald of Brave New Films about a new video they've released today, $3 Trillion Shopping Spree. It invites folks to say what they would buy with $3 trillion. We already know what the Bush administration decided to buy with our money. Donahue's third point, that we spend too much on defense with or without the Iraq War, will be the focus of my conversation later with Gordon Adams, former Chief National Security Budget Officer for the Clinton White House at the OMB. And one thing I plan to find out is why Congress, now the Democrats have been in power for nearly a year and a half, continues to allow the president, after 5 years of war, to continue to pay for it with emergency funds. Then Gordon and I will take your call. So here's a bit of my conversation with Donahue. I ask him to explain the two stories in his film, Body of War.
And the part of the film that focuses on Congress focuses on the October 2002 Iraq War debate, which everyone who sees our movie will realize was a superficial bumper sticker debate. Robotic senators and House members got up. A smoking gun.
Yeah.
Can become a mushroom cloud.
When you show how they, every one
amazing.
Of them is repeating
White House,
the same talking points.
White House Iraq Group, WIG. These were the ad agency warriors who gave us shock and awe. They name our wars like their video games. Well, these are the same people who gave the talking points to the Congress. A gun smokes after it's been fired. And another senator says, a gun smokes after. And by the time the third, fourth person says this, you're saying to yourself, this is the debate that brought us this, the most serious, horrible, massive foreign policy blunder of my lifetime.
Yeah. And the thing that you see in that piece of it, as you say, is that clearly, there was no debate. Clearly, these people did not take their responsibility seriously. The same people who didn't read the Patriot Act before they passed it,
you're
almost
right
unanimously.
That's absolutely so.
So, and the other side is one individual, Thomas Young.
Right.
How did you run into him?
I was visiting my old friend Ralph Nader in Washington, on whose campaign I had been a participant in 2000. And then to save my marriage, I got off the bus in 2004. I mean, Marla was really upset with me, and I was going to elect another Republican, and who do I think I am? So I got off. I got off the bus. After the election, I went to see him. I thought, well, if anybody needs a hug, you know, because Ralph was really taking incoming. And we go back to
I know 60. You do. He was the most frequent guest you ever had on your show.
He was. And during our conversation, he said, a mother at Walter Reed wants to see me. Do you want to go? I said, yeah, I'd never been to Walter Reed. So back I fly a week later, and off me and Ralph. Well, this kid, you could hardly see him in the sheets because he was so pale. You could see his cheekbones. He was wall-to-wall morphine. I met his mother. By the way, I don't think he remembers this visit at all. And I learned about the gravity of his injury. He's a T4, which means his spine was severed. Anatomists know what that means. He is paralyzed from the chest down. And to see this young man close up, you know, the closer you get to this, you look at this kid. He has bowel and bladder problems. You know, you see a person in a wheelchair, oh, poor person, he can't walk. It's a lot more than that.
And when people see the film, they will see that.
Yeah, they will. Words, this is a very close-up look at the harm in harm's
way. Very close-up look.
Right. If this Congress had obeyed the Constitution, you know, only Congress can declare war. They didn't declare war. They put their hand over their eyes, and they handed a piece of paper to the president, which said, you know, if you think that way, when he goes to war, if it doesn't work, they can say, well, we didn't realize, we didn't.
If I knew now.
Yeah. So you have it's a third rail issue, and nobody wants to take it. It's awful. James Madison, as you saw, it's too much of a temptation for one man. Only Congress can declare war. It's the most fabulous feature of our Constitution. Don't give one man the Army, the Navy, or the Marines. He'll get on his horse, he'll draw his sword, and march to glory. I mean, they will. This is how men behave. And the framers knew this. They knew it, and we ignore it. I can't get over it.
Yeah.
The people who give prizes to young people for speaking at Daughters of the American Revolution banquets, or Rotary, Why I'm Proud to Be an American, these are the same people who abandoned the Constitution first. They have people in cages, no papers, no Red Cross, no phone calls, lawyer, no family, no nothing. This is not the country that I was raised to pledge allegiance to.
Okay, and Phil Donahue finishes that interview with a quote in which he really makes the point at the end of that interview that it's not just about Iraq. It's also that when you have a defense budget of $500 billion, when you do that, eventually it's going to be used. And if you can keep the people afraid, you know it's going to be used. I'm Terry McNally, sitting in for Rachel Maddow. It's 17 minutes past the hour. I'll be right back with a wild new online game show, the $3 trillion shopping spree on Air America Radio.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. Pop the hood. Let's see what's making that noise.
Hi, this is Terry McNally, still sitting in for Rachel Maddow. It's approximately 22 after the hour, and this is Hour 3 of the Rachel Maddow Show for Monday, April 14th. And remember, beware the Ides of April, tax day tomorrow, and what shall be bought with those hard-earned taxes of yours? Well, for that, I'm going to bring in a couple of minutes here, Robert Greenwald of Brave New Films, who has a new online game show, the $3 trillion shopping spree. Robert Greenwald, in addition to Outfoxed, Uncovered, Unprecedented, and Unconstitutional, Greenwald has been involved in the making of 50 movies, including Steal This Movie, based on the life of Abby Hoffman, a friend of Greenwald's, Crooked E, a satirical TV movie about Enron's collapse. And he may be the only director in Hollywood to adorn his workplace with this quotation from Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass. Quote, "The attitude of great poets is to cheer up slaves and horrify despots." Welcome to Air America Radio, Bobby Greenwald.
Robert, it's good to be with you.
Oh, sorry, Robert. you briefly, before we go to the newest one, what is the notion of Brave New Films?
Well, Brave New Films is a studio that makes content, that has marketing, that has distribution. Only our mission is not about making the most profit. Our mission is about helping the forces of progressive organizations and individuals help change the world. So whether we do full-length documentaries, whether we do the short viral videos, which, by the way, our videos have now just passed 15 million online.
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you. Or whether we do live television programming online, the goal always is how do we get people to work and take action towards social change.
Okay. And the newest one that popped up in my email this morning was the $3 trillion shopping spree. What's the premise there?
The premise is that we all read that the war is going to cost us $3 trillion.
Joe Stiglitz's yep. book of that title came out about a week ago, and he's got a lot of documentation to back that up.
Absolutely, and he goes through it in great detail. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning economist, so his credentials are as good as they get. And we were discussing it with my colleagues at Brave New Films, and we were all focused on how do we communicate to people what that really means. And in the course of a meeting, the really smart folks here came up with the idea, well, let's make it a shopping spree, which on the one hand seems like we're making fun, but we're really not. So our tech geniuses, Jim Gilliam and his crew, worked round the clock to design a shopping cart. So you literally go to $3trillion.org and then try to spend that money. So you can buy every book on Amazon. You can buy healthcare for half the world. You can buy 50 football teams. You know, you can make it serious. You can make it substantive. But you begin to comprehend what it means. And then you send it on to somebody. You say, here's my gift to you. I've spent $1 trillion. I still have $2 trillion left.
Right. Okay, let's listen to a bit of the video that you'll see when you go. This is an abridged version of the video you see when you go to, what's the website again?
3trillion.org.
It's the number 3, the word trillion.org. Here we go.
What would you do with $3 trillion? The $3 trillion shopping spree is your chance to find out. Mary in Michigan gave health care to all Americans and still had $2.8 trillion left over. George B. in Washington started an illegal war that resulted in 151,000 dead Iraqi civilians. What will you do with $3 trillion? Go to www.3trillion.org and spend, spend, spend.
Okay, sounds like fun.
Yeah. Well, we wanted to make it fun, but of course it's incredibly serious. But sometimes humor, sometimes satire is a way to get people's attention. And again, we hope your listeners will go to 3trillion.org, will fill up their shopping cart, will add their own ideas, and then send it on to friends, to colleagues, to anybody who you want, so that they begin to really sense in addition to all the incredible loss of human lives, what a horrific, disgusting waste of our money.
Right, exactly. When we cannot afford health care for all, when we cannot afford education that will prepare our kids for the 21st century, when we cannot take care of our seniors, when we cannot take care of our environment, we cannot build acceptable levees in New Orleans, on and on and on, there's where $3 trillion is literally going up in smoke. So 3trillion.org, that's the number 3, the word trillion.org. A couple of last words, Robert.
Well, again, it's a game. It can be played by young. It can be played by old. And we want your suggestions. How would you spend the money? Go there, write it in, add it to your shopping carts, and then go to everybody on your email list. That really is how we can all make a difference.
Great. Thank you very much. Robert Greenwald of Brave New Films. The website is 3trillion.org. Go there, play, and then pass it on.
This is The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. Find links to today's top news stories at Rachel's blog, maddowonline.com.
Hello, welcome back again. I'm Terry McNally, sitting in this Monday for Rachel Maddow. It's approximately 34:20 after the hour. This is hour 3 of The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. So Phil Donahue says if you give the military $500 billion every year, they'll find ways to use it. Robert Greenwald and Brave New Films invite you to go to 3trillion.org and tell them how you would rather spend the money you're already spending on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And now I'm going to bring in Gordon Adams to talk about what he calls the strategy-free consensus of the 2008 election campaign. McCain, Clinton, and Obama all agree we should increase military spending, yet none of them has expressed a strategic vision that explains why we need to spend all that money. One thing I plan to find out is why Congress, as I said before, the Democrats have been in power for nearly a year and a half, why they continue to allow the president to pay for 5 years of war with so-called emergency funds. Then Gordon and I will take your calls. You can call in at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270 to talk about military spending and the waste that your money is going to, the waste and harm. Gordon Adams is a professor of international relations at the School of International Service at American University in Washington, D.C. He's also a distinguished fellow at the Henry Stimson Center. But from 93 to 97, he put the taxpayers' money where his mouth was, working for Bill Clinton as the senior White House official for national security budgets. Before that, for 10 years, he created and ran a defense budget think tank in D.C. He writes for the Democracy Arsenal blog and a regular e-column for the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. Welcome to the Rachel Maddow Show, Gordon Adams.
Thank you, Terry.
Okay, so what is this this strategy-free consensus you talk about?
Well, every one of the candidates seems to agree on two things where it comes to defense, Terry. Thing one is we've got to have more ground forces because the Iraq war shows we're stressing the ground force. And thing two is to recover from Iraq, we got to spend more money on the defense budget overall, and particularly on those new troops and hardware systems. And none of the three candidates has given us a strategic rationale for why that budget needs to grow and why the force needs to grow.
Okay, now let's clear some things up here. In other words, I've looked at some of their statements on this stuff, and they talk about, well, we've basically worked the troops into the ground, we've worked our equipment into the ground, so it's not just business as usual. We've got to add more money just to get back to where we were before all of this started. That's not a strategic vision, but is it persuasive to you?
No, it's not persuasive at all, because the way we have funded the war, we've added what we call emergency supplementals on top of the regular defense budget. All those emergency supplementals go through a different budget planning process in the Pentagon, and they whiz through the White House, and they whiz through the Congress on a fast track. And we haven't done any work in the Pentagon at all to say, what do we really need? What is the base budget including? And in essence, what we've been able to do over the past seven budgets is have it all of the force planning, all of the exercising, all of the training, all of the equipment, and all of the expenditure on the Iraq war as well.
Okay, so as I said before, this thing has puzzled me time and again. I suppose I should have accepted it when the Republicans ran Congress, but since the Democrats took over, it not only still doesn't make sense, but it seems politically stupid. How does the president get away with still coming to Congress for emergency supplementals after he's invaded and occupied two countries and been going at this for over 5 years?
It is patently absurd, because you'll recall, Terry, back in the Vietnam War era, and even going further back in the Korean War era, when the nation was at war, for about the first year or two, you said, okay, genuinely, we didn't know how much this was going to cost, so we're going to have to ask for extra money, supplemental funding. By year two or three of those two wars, the Defense Department was rolling that spending and that planning back into the regular budget process in the Pentagon and doing the trade-offs. What do we have to give up here? What do we have to slow down? What do we have to cut out in the basic operations so we can conduct this war? This is a unique moment in American budget history for the Pentagon. They are able year after year after year to come back for what now amounts to 25% of all the money they have as an emergency supplemental, not scrubbed in comparison to anything else, tied entirely, well, I shouldn't say entirely, because in fact what they've been able to do is move some stuff into the emergencies they might otherwise have bought through the basic budget. There's been some aircraft and some restructuring of the Army programs that normally would have been thought about in the base budget. Well, they've stuffed those into the supplemental too.
Okay, so what are the political implications? In other words, again, going to my question, you're a Democratic senator, you're a Democratic Senate leader, you're an Armed Services Committee guy. You put up with this because why?
Well, there's two reasons. In the House of Representatives, there's probably a pretty strong plurality, but not a majority, that would like to tackle the spending problem in defense. The problem is that they don't have enough votes, so they could tackle it. They might even get a majority to cut it back, but they know they're not going to be able to overwhelm a presidential veto. It's even worse in the Senate, because it's one vote majority, and that one vote is Joe Lieberman, who supports the war. So the Democrats know they don't have the funding to tackle this, but there isn't even the same will in the Senate to tackle it. And the reason for that, as you've suggested, Terry, is politics. Democrats do not want to look like they're soft on national security.
Gordon Adams, are you saying that for them merely to say no more getting away with this, keeping it off the regular budget, would have politically negative ramifications? It seems to me the people would go, okay, they're not letting down the troops, they're just asking for sound finances.
Yeah, and in fact, interestingly, in the last year, they have asked the Department of Defense to come back in to them at the same time with the Iraq war and with the regular budget, but not in the same budget. And so when the Pentagon has come forward, it's been one piece for the regular basic budget in defense and the other piece for the Iraq war. From the Pentagon's point of view, it's pretty much all the same thing. From the Congress's point of view, they don't want to touch anything that makes it look like they could be accused of being, you know, letting down the troops, being soft on defense, or letting down the troops in Iraq.
And is there other things? Does it, in other words, if this emergency supplemental was put into the regular budget, would that cramp the Senate style on how much they can spend in discretionary funds?
Oh, absolutely, because both the Senate and the House work under a budget rule. There isn't one for the executive branch anymore. That died in 2002. But those two chambers work within a budget rule. So if they rolled all this spending inside the regular basic budget, they'd have to cut everything else by $120 to $170 billion to pay for it, or they'd have to make choices in defense, and that's the thing they've been ducking.
Okay, now I get where we're going here. In other words, by playing with the military, keeping it as emergency supplementals, both sides get to fudge it about what they're actually spending. Both sides get their benefits in being able to spend money, say whatever they want, and shirk responsibility.
You will hear time and time again, Terry, that the defense budget is just over $500 billion. Oh, yes, and then there's this other thing for Iraq. The reality is, from the Pentagon's point of view, that's all one budget. It's all got the same equipment in it. It's all got the same troops in it. It's all got the same special pays in it. It's all got the operating costs in it. And the operating cost money is fungible. So they're, in a sense, in the Congress, they've been able to have their cake and eat it, too.
Okay. This is Terry McNally sitting in for Rachel Maddow on The Rachel Maddow Show, Air America Radio, speaking with Gordon Adams. He was, from 93 to 97, the Clinton administration's guy on security budgets. Now he sits outside of the administration and outside of the power structure a bit, and has still puts that experience to bear, and that's what we're talking about now. Is there a website where people can find your work, Gordon?
Yeah, the best place to find the work, the kind of work that we're doing right now through the Stimson Center, is go to www.stimson.org, and you'll see a header in there, a little button to push that says, budgeting for foreign policy and defense.
And okay.
And
we're
going to,
when we come back from the next break in a few minutes, we're going to take calls at 866-303-2270. You'll be able to talk with me, Dr. McNally, and also with Dr. Adams. Let me finally ask you, you have told me off the air that you see a deep, deep problem here, which is that the, that so much of the United States energy, funding, authority, responsibility for dealing with the world has been shifting gradually more and more to defense and less to state.
Let me tell you a really interesting data point on that, Terry. 10 years ago, when the United States government reported to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development in Paris on how much we spent on development assistance, about 6% of that total was being spent through the Department of Defense. When the government reported the same data 2 years ago in 2006, over 20% was being spent through the Department of Defense. We're now in a place where the Defense Department is increasingly responsible for our international engagement with foreign assistance programs, subsidies to foreign governments, training and equipping of foreign militaries, emergency reconstruction assistance in Iraq and Afghanistan. And all of that spending is now going through the Department of Defense in increasing amounts. We've just decided the military tool must be the most efficient that we probably got at doing this. I think there's a real danger in doing that.
Okay, you point out that all three of the political campaigns, Obama, Clinton, and McCain, all prove how tough they are and how American they are by saying they'll increase military spending. What do you think is the long-term negative of what's going on in terms of our role in the world? In other words, let's say that the Democrats win in 2009 and one will sense that there will be some sort of a shift. Is there a momentum with which they may not be able to stop?
It's going to be very hard to reverse this trend. It's going to take a lot of work, but the danger, I think, is threefold. Danger number one is that our military is going to be overstressed with all these additional missions of reconstruction and foreign assistance and governance and the like, and they're not tasked or trained or really prepared to do those missions. Problem number two is if we ask the military to do these missions, we're basically undercutting all of our civilian tools of statecraft, our diplomacy, our foreign assistance. We're underfunding them, we're understaffing them, and we're underutilizing them. And the big danger, I think, Terry, the third real danger here, is whether you like the guys and gals in uniform or not, I don't have a problem with them, but we're putting a uniform face on our engagement around the world. And a lot of other countries are going to be concerned about the U.S. international engagement, the face on our engagement, being in uniform and not in a diplomatic or a foreign assistance dress.
Okay, and what would you, if you were writing the header of a script for a courageous presidential candidate right now, what would you have them say and do?
I would have them saying, first off, we've got to be coming out of Iraq. Second off, we've got to restructure the military so it's suited to the missions it should be performing, and those ought to bring it back from the kinds of missions we're now asking it to do. And number three, I'd be saying we're going to really develop and build up the civilian toolkit of statecraft so that we engage the world both nationally, unilaterally, and multilaterally especially, using all of the toolkit of statecraft with the military in a support function, not in the lead.
And so although, as we said, perhaps a Democratic winner, perhaps even a black one with an African name would give a different image to the world, you're saying they would be hamstrung in really delivering on that image since they're also running on a campaign of fattening up the military proportions of the amount of force and money we have to do these things.
They're going to find themselves significantly hogtied when they get into office, because by calling for an increase in the defense budget, which next year is going to be over $700 billion, not $500, they're going to find that they do not have the flexibility and the freedom of maneuver to do the foreign assistance and diplomatic and homeland security domestic spending programs they want to do. They're going to be spending that budget on defense.
Okay. I'm Terry McNally sitting in for Rachel Maddow. It's 48 minutes past the hour. Gordon Adams is going to stick around. He and I will take your calls for the rest of the hour. Call in at 866, let me get that number, 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
The Rachel Maddow Show.
Welcome back. I'm Terry McNally sitting in for Rachel Maddow, Monday, April 14th, the last few minutes of the last hour of the Rachel Maddow Show. When we last left you, I was speaking with Gordon Adams, former security budget chief with the Clinton administration, talking about the madness of the money in defense. And we're going to take your callers now. Let me speak with Ron in Seattle. Ron, you're on the line.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me on. And I have 2 points.
Okay.
One that has to do with, I've actually asked this on another show, Bill Frist's show, and I'm still waiting for somebody to ask the question. It's a great show. I love Dr. Maddow, and I love his show as well.
Love is good. What's the question?
Okay, the question is, given that the pipeline for defense is about a year long, what exactly are the Democrats afraid of? Because to not pass a spending bill simply means that the clock starts ticking. It doesn't deprive the troops of anything because there is a year's worth of money in the pipeline.
Okay.
All it does,
Ron,
is it puts a date on the calendar.
Ron, let me paraphrase. In other words, you're not talking about what the candidate should be saying about what they want to do in next year's budget. You're talking about why doesn't Congress stop giving them what they're asking for now. Gordon?
Yeah, it's actually more complicated than that. For some things, there's a long lag time in spending. That's largely hardware. Hardware takes a very long time to spend out. Sometimes it's 2 years or 3 years. For ships, it's sometimes as much as 4 or 5 years. The money that's provided for troops, once it's appropriated, is a year worth of money for the troops. What the problem that you have is that we were talking about earlier is this extra spending for operations in Iraq. That's it, that's what's in the supplementals. And the money that is provided already in the regular budget is only fungible in the area of operations, not in the terms of salary and not in terms of equipment. So you can't really fund the whole thing on the basis of 1 year's appropriation.
So what would that mean in terms of if they said no?
If they said no, at some point the funding would simply dry up. Right now for the Army, if the additional money is not appropriated by the Congress, right now the estimate is that sometime in June, the Army is simply going to have exhausted all of the available pots it has to support the operation in Iraq.
Okay. Chris in Santa Fe, you're on the line with Terry McNally and Gordon Adams.
Gentlemen, wow. this entire, you know, Congress is terrible and all the presidential candidates are useless take on politics is usually the province of the right wing. It's weird to hear it here. You know, Rachel Maddow, for a long time, engaged a radio audience, and now she pontificates and tells us all how wonderful she is on TV and then hands it off to someone like you, Terry. This is really disappointing.
Oh, okay. Thanks a lot. Pamela in Seattle.
I'm going to be more complimentary because I think this is old home week for KPFK. Thanks you for being on, Terrence, and Gordon, who did Iron Triangle for many years.
Right.
And I wondered where you went because, of course, I learned so much from your analysis of the
military.
Okay,
we have to wrap it up. If you have a question, how long do we have to answer a question?
I want to know about the Blackwater, and is that a new phenomenon, Gordon, or have we been paying for privatization of the military?
Okay,
all along?
Okay, we only have 20 seconds. How does Blackwater and private contractors fit into this, Gordon?
In 20 seconds, we've got now 100,000 contractor personnel in Iraq. The military doesn't want to provide security for them, so we have contracted out the security. 25,000 of them provide security for the other 7,000.
Okay, I got to take this.